Welcome to the Mystery College Podcast. Today we're interviewing with David Coleman. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Jake. Hey, everyone. How are you all doing?
Great to have you on the show, David.
It's good to be here.
I'm really curious if you could share some of what brought you into meditation, mindfulness, magic, and astrology, which is one of your flagship passions.
Well, my story with all of those things really doesn't have a beginning, ultimately, because I remember being just drawn to them as a child from, like, what my earliest memories are, right? Being interested in things, right? I was interested in these things. And my father was a wonderful influence on that, who bought me many books and read me many things that were, you know, when I couldn't read what the words were, he'd tell me what the words were. So from the age of like 5 or 6, he was teaching me all this stuff, but he had no personal interest in it, and he was more into football. But he put his disappointment in my lack of football aside to teach me all of the things that I wanted to know about. He was also important in my early education because he taught me a lot about nature. I had my first experiences watching nature and planting seeds in the garden with him. So he was very important in my life going forward as well, because when I was very young, he died, and his death was a very transformative experience for me. And I always felt after he died that he was around and I could feel his presence, and there was always a sense of him being around me, guiding me, trying to communicate with me, and that was always there, right? It's always been there. So there's been like a natural way in me of being sensitive to the dead, although those that have passed on, because they're not really dead, moved on to the next plane of existence, the astral. And that is in my astrology. So I didn't actually get into learning particularly about astrology, although I was aware of it, having come across it in my general studies of the supernatural, paranormal phenomena, UFOs as well, included in that. I didn't get around to really studying astrology until I was in my early 20s. I had been at that point in performing arts. I'd been like working as a performing artist on the stage, in television, and in film through most of my early life. And I was just not happy with that as my future. At the age of 21, I had this big realization that this is not what I wanted to do with my life anymore, and I immediately quit everything that was connected to that and went off with no plans to do anything into the wilderness, and spent a couple of years in the wilderness trying to figure out what was next for me. And my mother then became the instrument that brought astrology into my life in the way that it is now, because I was just sat there and looking bored to her, and one day she came in, she said, yeah, feeling sorry for me, like, what about this? And she handed me this book by Jeff Mayo called How to Do Astrology. And it was just how to draw up your birth chart, how to interpret your birth chart, a little thin book like this size. And I thought, okay, that's interesting to me, I'll do it. And I, of course, did my own birth chart, got my birth data from my mom, did my own birth chart pretty much that night, I think it was. I had to go and get some tables of houses and some other books. So I had to go to an occult bookstore that I knew to buy all this stuff. But it was pretty much the day after that I went and got all that stuff, because I was not having anything better to do and also quite interested. And when I put my chart out in front of me and I started putting the bits of like the planets around it, like there's the sun, there's the moon, there's Mercury, there's Venus, one by one, I was putting these planets in. Now, I already knew that I already knew a bit about astrology, and I already knew that I recognized the Scorpio sign qualities in myself. Very intense, very interested in what are occult or taboo subjects, very private, all of those things I recognized in myself. And I thought, well, there's my sun. And I put my sun down in Scorpio, right? And then I put my moon down in Scorpio. And I was like, oh, the sun and the moon in Scorpio. That makes sense. Because I always felt that I was really, really strongly a Scorpio, right? I really recognized it in myself. It makes sense, the sun around it. Then I added Mercury and Venus and Jupiter and Neptune and the midheaven. I just ended up putting this, like, a whole solar system, basically, into Scorpio. And it's like, oh, this makes so much sense. This makes so much sense because I'm very, very, very Scorpio-like, and I always recognize those qualities in me. And I was immediately convinced that there had to be something in this thing called astrology. So then I started just doing it for my mom, doing it for my sisters, doing it for my friends, and writing them out by hand. And it just went on from there. It just became something that I became obsessed with, finding out more and more information about. It was like a real passion. Especially in the beginning. And I started a business doing that, right? In the process, I was always doing meditation from like the ages like 13 or 14. I was always practicing some type of meditation. It was just part of what I was doing, right, all my life, because I just enjoyed it. And I loved exploring my creative imagination. I loved all of that always. But it wasn't until like shortly after the astrology stuff that the bargain stuff started to come together. And when that started to come together, I read in the second book, Bardon, what were to me then very cryptic comments about synthetic astrology. And what he seemed to be implying was that there was a synthesis between astrology and magic. And this is what he was referring to as a synthetic astrology, a synthesis between the magical universal laws and the romantic divinatory practice of astrology, which was at that point in the 50s, very much about predicting the future and telling people what their children's characters were going to be like or whatever, like, right? Yeah. That was where it was, but he saw it as having astrology as having another purpose, and it was very clear to me when I read it that that's what he was talking about. And he dropped a few clues about what that looked like in the second book, just a very, very short couple of pages he talks about it. And it just, that set me off on, oh, this is a mystery, isn't it? And I love mysteries. It's like, you know, Scooby-Doo, right? Like, get in the mystery van. Let's get on the trail of this mystery. What the hell is this thing, synthetic astrology, that he's talking about? And yeah, long story short, process of initiation goes on. Process of learning about astrology goes on. At some point, it's very hard to tell you when that is because I don't really have a clear picture of that. It's like, it's gradual. But at some point they merge together, and I have this realization that ends up in a book that I write called The 26 Keys that gets published in 2011. And it's basically a synthesis of magic with astrology for a modern audience. It's basically the magic of astrology for a modern audience. In that sense, it's a version of the 17th book of Thoth, the magic of the star tarot. It's a version of that is accessible to people who are not initiated. You don't have to be fully initiated in the first card as a magician to use this version of the magic of astrology. There is a version of the magic of astrology that you do need to be initiated in as a magician, because it involves dealing with the intelligences that are operative behind the astrological influences, I would put it that way. That's the 17th tarot image, the star, right? But there is a version of that, because astrology is developed in such a way alongside magic. And they've always had that parallel development together throughout the centuries. They've always been able to talk the same language, right? There is a version of that that's possible now that people can use without really having, you know, the necessity of being fully initiated. And that's a journey that's mostly about exploring astrology and discovering the reality of it for yourself in a magical way, in a magical practice, which is, you know, I experience it happening. I am a creative factor in what occurs, right? So that's really my journey. It's been like a good 50 years. I'm 53 years old, right? And it really started when I was like 4 or 5. And it's been through like a number of major chapters or acts, if you like. But that's basically the summation of it, where I am now.
That's brilliant. And all kind of it summarized in the creation of the 26 Keys book back in 2011. And I'm wondering about the process that went into the creation of that book, because it's a big volume and it's incredibly in depth and detailed.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, here's the story, right? I don't really often tell this story, but I'll tell it to you. All right. I was like, I knew that I had this idea, right? And I knew that I had this, if you like, this mission in life to do something with this idea, right? I'd come to that realization in my initiation. And another realization I had come to in my initiation was a long, long, long time ago, like in terms of like individual lifetimes, but not too long ago historically, like we're going back 5,000 years, let's say, right? There wasn't really any difference between magic and astrology, right? They were intertwined at the core, at the heart of the mysteries, right, that were being taught. Not the astrology that we know today or the magical training that we know today, but definitely the same principles and some of the same exercises and so on were being taught, but they were intertwined together. You couldn't really separate them, right? So I guess what I'm talking about here is I'd seen the history of these two things. I'd been shown the history of these two things as well, right? So this is what I'm describing about what I'd learned about the history of these two things. They began together, right? And you could not separate them together. Magic and astrology were intertwined together, right? But over the centuries, they pulled apart. They went and had individualized development paths. They had separate paths, but parallel paths to go on, right? And one of the things that really really kind of like caused them to diverge quite a large amount was with the arrival of new religions. Islam and Christianity arrived, messianic religions arrived, right? Monotheistic religions arrived. Whereas in the previous era where magic and astrology were operating together as a unity, there were multiple deities, right? It was the deity for everything in nature that you could think of and a few other things that were forgotten as well. Now we were moving into an era of monotheism, right? That was a very big change. And one of the things that happened was that magic became heretical, blasphemous in a lot of these religions' eyes. But astrology, especially in its in the territories of Islam, right, in the Middle East, astrology sort of weathered it off, right? Sort of was not condoned, I would say, so heavily. Because it was too institutionalized. It institutionalized itself in the picking of kings and emperors and pharaohs and all of this for so long that it was very difficult to condemn it completely, right? So it was sort of stuck, embedded in the institutions, whereas magic could go fully underground and had to go fully underground, and the mystery schools vanished from view because they had to as a survival mechanism, right? So that was one of the first things that caused them to diverge. And then later on, I would say the next big sort of change for them both was during the Age of Enlightenment, when astrology was almost like wiped out in the 1700s by you know, this very strong atmosphere of rationalism and scientific, well, I'll call it scientific dogma, right? It's like, you know, it was really Charles Darwin had basically started all of this. Copernicus had started it all earlier, but it was basically wiping out the religious paradigm that had existed for hundreds of years and replacing it with a more technological, scientific worldview that the world was moving into, right? At this point, astrology was really in danger of being wiped out. It was no longer recognized as being part of the institutions, and it sort of held on for you know, centuries in the public view, whereas magic had been very not in the public view, right? But at this point, it almost got wiped out from being in the public view and condemned and forgotten as ridiculous. But it sort of reinvented itself as a sort of entertainment, as a popular entertainment, as an amusement. That's the beginnings of when we get modern phenomena of what's your sun sign in the newspapers and on now on the internet, right? That is a type of astrology that's based on real astrology, what we call professional astrology, but it is more a form of entertainment, right? You cannot really take it seriously as an indicator of what's going to happen in your day or in your month. You really do need some better astrology than that, I would say, to be able to make those kinds of forecasts for an individual person, right? So, but it managed to survive and stay in the public view. That's important. It managed to sort of stay on view and develop in the view of the public, right? And then coming to the 20th century, this wonderful thing happens, and astrology sort of breaks out of its entertainment, where it's been for a while as kind of a form of popular entertainment, and magic starts to come back as a result of movements like Blavatsky's and Crowley's, and also things like the discovery of Uranus and Neptune bring all these things back into public discussion again, spiritualism and all of that. So we get this resurgence of both things in the 20th century. They both start coming back into public view again. Like magic starts to become less hidden with Franz Bardon's work, and he represents it to the world so that there's a now modern initiatory system for people to follow, where they don't have to belong to any of these clubs or organizations that have had their flaws in the past and will probably continue to. And astrology goes through this massive revolution with the arrival of thinkers like Freud and Jung, and these changes in psychology, in mass psychology especially, where people really mature psychologically in the 20th century. And alongside it, astrology begins to explain some of this, right? And we get Jungian astrologers, we get Freudian astrologers, people who are talking about Saturn as the archetype of the shadow in terms of Jungian astrology, and vast then like pollination of different types of astrology occurs when computers arrive and the internet starts to happen, and you get people in India talking about Indian astrology with people in the West for the first time. All of this starts to happen, and so we're ripe in this moment. We're ripe for the recombination of magic and astrology after centuries of individual development, learning different things and developing in different ways, and having this very unique, special kind of like path through history. We're right in this time in history to bring them back and integrate those pools of knowledge together again, for people in the future to do with whatever they will. That's what I think the overall path that led to me writing the book is. And now there's the personal part, right? The personal part is like me realizing those things and realizing that, okay, I'm in a position where I can do something with that, and I should do something with that because I feel like I want to do something with that. It feels like a passion in me. So I begin doing that, and it's one of the most amazing experiences of my life, quite honestly. It's really one of the most amazing experiences of my life. I feel myself from the very beginning. I feel Bardon is with me, and it's not just his spirit that's with me. There's like a hand on my shoulder sometimes when I'm writing this stuff. I can feel it so strongly that it's almost like he's standing behind me as I'm writing it. And I'm spending like a few months with him in that sense, like getting my ideas together and then getting the courage up to do this. And then I'm sitting down and writing it at some point in early 2011. I think it was January or February. And I'm taking like 3 months to write all 500 pages of it. And it's just coming out of me in a first draft with one like very, very, very detailed editing sweep afterwards to make sure that there were like spelling, grammar corrections, all of that. A few tweaks, but it was mostly just coming out of me in 3 months of solid writing. It's like every day, because I just loved doing it so much. And I was just so excited to be doing it at that time. And I've never had an experience where it just flowed. So it just gushed. It just poured out of me. It just poured out of me. And then when it was done, it was done. It felt like, okay, I'm done. It felt complete. It had this ending to it that wasn't like, am I done? No, I'm done. This is it. It's finished. It's almost like I just wrote it down. Which is what I really think happened. I just wrote it down. It pre-existed me, and I just like, oh yeah, I found you, and I'm just gonna write you down word for word. And that's what it really, really felt like. But it was, you know, there were years before that. There was like 10 years before that where I was like playing with the techniques that I wrote down. I was developing those techniques myself in my personal practice. I was experimenting on myself for a good 10 years before I actually started to write all of that down. So I guess that's part of the process too. And that's why partly why it all just gushed out of me.
Brilliant. And then, like, you'd had 10 years of practice doing this, validating your work, testing hypotheses and validating the magical practice you share in your, you know, extremely voluminous book that has that's awesome.
It's good.
It's a great book too. I had a copy of it, but I lost when I moved from Seattle elsewhere. But I wanted to know about the like are there any particular keys that may be of interest to viewers to get like a sense of, well, maybe I want to learn about these other keys too.
Yeah. I like most of your viewers, I'm guessing, will be interested in the Bardem related material, right? The ninth temple key is really about initiation. That is one of the most important places in your chart as far as your initiation is concerned. It provides things like teachings, gurus, mentors, concrete guidance or concrete support from your greater self comes through the ninth house experience, right? But anything to do with enlightenment really is connected to the ninth house. So clearly that's important. And understanding what energies you have operating in that part of your chart can help you to really tune into and hear the voice of your greater self. All right.
And
everybody has a different way of doing that. All right. Has a different path to connecting with their greater self. Right. A different sort of experience of that. And that's all kind of symbolized by the ninth house. Saturn is always a planet that in every chart is going to be relevant to initiation. Saturn is also connected to the greater self presence in your life. A lot of astrologers, many astrologers talk about Saturn as being connected to your karma and the burdens that you bring into this life or the greatest lessons that you had to learn in this life. All of this is accurate. And so it becomes an important symbol astrologically for the karma that you have to overcome or change or transform in this life as you're going through the path of initiation, this karma will come up for you so that you can, release it, deal with it, right? Maybe not necessarily in the form of events, because you might get to it in another way as a magician. You might get to it as a realization in a meditation that you have had this past life experience and that you have this karma from this past life experience, and therefore no event needs to happen to cause you to be presented with that karma, being presented to yourself, right? So the magicians have other ways of dealing with their karma, is basically what I'm saying. But Saturn is basically the astrological factor in everyone's chart that makes it unavoidable that you have to deal with some of your karma in this lifetime, right? There's no getting off the hook for anybody, like in incarnation. There's a reason that you came here, and it's pretty serious, right? It's, not to be taken too seriously, but it is a serious business, okay? I think in general, people that are interested in initiation have something, usually they have something going on with Uranus, Neptune, or Pluto in their charts. One of those three or all three of those planets are somehow plugged into the rest of their astrology in ways that helps them to understand what kinds of magician they might be, all right? Those are three very different types of magician that I see when they're plugged into the chart, right?
Do you have a label or archetype for those three types?
Yeah,
how would you describe?
Yeah, it's like Uranus is basically your archetypal magician, right? But the Uranus is also a bit of the trickster magician, the Loki magician, right? Like Barton displays this, right? At least where it's alleged that he displays this in the biography that was written of him by Otti, right? Where he tricks the lodge members into like basically self-destruction. Like he tricks them into destruction, right? There's a trickster aspect to magicians, right? They do things without being noticed. That's the Uranian side. It's generally like the vanilla type of magician, right? It can be any kind of magician. But then you've got the evocation magician. That's definitely the Neptune magician. And you've then got the more transformative magician that's working with like alchemy, for example, alchemical substances. That's a Plutonian type, right? So they're not limited to those things, but that helps you to see the differences between them. There's one type that deals with spirits that's nearly always like a magician of the Neptune variety. Or if they're not dealing with spirits, they're into more mystical things like the meditative aspects of magic, right? Whereas the Plutonian magicians is much more like driven to explore maybe some of the darker aspects as well. Like you might find someone interested in demonology or like breaking of curses, things like that, as well as alchemy, transformative magic or alchemy with Pluto. And Uranus is also, I see that a lot in magicians who do a lot of mental wandering or into mental wandering or have gifts with mental wandering, right? Essentially, I think it's mental, astral, and sort of transmutative. It's the three types.
Mental, astral, and transmutative.
Yeah, like it's like a mentally focused magician who's very clear about like Rod is a really good example of this. Like they're very clear about the laws, the mental laws, there's clarity to them. That's a Uranian type of magician, right? Someone who's very clear on things and has a very good way of teaching in the mental on the mental plane, right, and clarifying things for people, what things mean. He's done a great deal of work in that area. And then you've got like a more Neptune like magician, right? That is more like Ninad, I guess, right? And also, but I would say in there, I would include myself somewhat in there because I do talk a lot about astral stuff, right? Astrology is the science of all the ology of the astral, right? But I would also say I'm quite Plutonian. There's a lot of Plutonian aspects in me too. I help people to transform things. I help people to shift things, right? I see the deeper sides of things. That's all a Plutonian aspect, right? Yeah, it's. I think those planets are important too for people to understand. They're also the planets that are bringing all these big collective shifts that we can't escape from at this time, like the arrival of new technologies, existential threats that are basically connected to new technology, environmental collapse or change, and I would call it also. I would also say the arrival of non-human intelligences in our experience. I think that is also something that's going on right now, that is part of this big change that these three new planets are, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are involved with. So yeah, they're important for understanding that as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the evolution of or some of these outer planets in relation to the evolution of human consciousness, technologies, either anecdotally through maybe if you've spoken with some beings from the outer planes who have had their hot takes, and or just from looking at the charts. What do you cipher?
I've also spoken to other people who have had contact with some of these beings who've explained some of these things to them, and they've then told me what their experiences are, and pretty much corroborate with many of my experiences, right? The arrival of these technologies is mostly connected to the, like at this point, the doings of like the planet Uranus and Pluto, right? They are paradigm altering technologies, right? They alter the overall paradigm that human beings have about existence. I would put it that way, right? Science is like the quantum sciences, which are beginning to really observe the power of the observer effect, the power of consciousness in play, right? And understand that it's always been a formative influence, right, in all scientific experimentation. In other words, they've been finding what they've been expecting to find, and they've been seeing what they've been expecting to see. Those kinds of realizations are the beginning of these changes in the way we look at the world, right? With the arrival of these new planets, we're facing like the end, where we're basically in a transition phase between the end of the old world and the beginning of the new world, and we're 1 foot in both and yet in neither at this point. And it's a very confusing time to be around, I would say, because of that, right? We don't know what the future holds, and when people generally look at the future with unknowns, they're afraid, right? And it makes for a very uncertain period, right? But we are gradually shifting day by day more and more into this new paradigm. And more people are going to be taken along for the ride, right? As we go further and further into this new paradigm. And people like you and I and others who are teaching spiritual practices are basically ahead of the curve, because we're going to discover that these are scientific as well, right? We're going to discover that these things have a basis in science, and that therefore they have solutions, right? They're not just pastimes or mysticisms. They're actual practical things that have practical applications, right? And technologies are going to arrive which support this as well. I don't know what those will be, but no doubt human ingenuity will create them. And so we're heading forward into a time of really enormous change, really great change. And the only stability that we have in times of great change is internally, right? This can be going through all kinds of revolutions. This outer world can go through all kinds of craziness, and undoubtedly will continue to do so forever, because it's continuously changing, right? So if it's continuously changing, there's always things to that you need to respond to. It's never really quite peaceful. But inside us, there is a point of contact with true inner peace, like the oneness of existence, right? Is completely still. It's completely changeless, right? It is just eternal. And any technique, any technology that we use, whether this is astrology or meditation or mantra or affirmation or martial art, any technology that we use to access that state, that inner presence, that inner light, I would call it, within us, is what's going to help us through. So I'm saying that we're ahead of the curve for that reason, because they're going to catch up with their need for this technology. They're going to catch up with their need for it. And they're going to need it also, I think, to explain a lot of things, right? A lot of things like telepathy do actually exist. And if you believe any of the encounters that people have had with non-human intelligences that allegedly come from outside of our solar system, then they're telepathic. Nearly all of them talk about these beings being telepathic. We're going to need the occult sciences to help people to understand how is that possible, and how can we develop telepathically in order to communicate with them more effectively, and so on and so on. So yeah, eventually people are going to come back to looking at stuff.
Yeah, and speaking on that note, do you have any, like, is there anything on the charts that may indicate that more intelligent life may come into the awareness of the populace, and there might be some intersectionality? Is that something you've speculated on, or have had any counters or discussions about?
Oh yeah, I think we are living in that period right now, actually. Earlier this year, Pluto went into Aquarius. That is going to be there until 2040 at least. Like, I think it's like, yeah, it's a long time. All right. Sometime in that period, I expect us to know that we're not alone. Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I think we're really on the doorstep of discovering that we're not alone in the universe. I wouldn't like to say what the first announcement of it will be, what the first so-called discovery of it will be, because I actually think it's been discovered for a long time and it's been hidden. But I think all of that is going to come out too. I think that secrecy is on the way out as well. And we're going to learn not all the truth, but we're going to learn some important things. And it's very, very soon. So yeah, and I also think that judging from what I feel, what I sense, and on what my friends that are very, you know, involved and deep in this area feel, they're getting ready to reveal themselves to. They're getting ready to show themselves more to. So I think that, yeah, we are on the verge of something. I don't think it's anything we need to worry about, all right? I think there will be a panic, of course, and there will be shock and worry from some people. But ultimately, that will wear off pretty quickly, and people will just go back to, you know, driving their car to work and doing all this stuff, like, in the midst of this changed world. But it's not the fact that we're not alone that really matters. That's not what really changes everything. It's what we learn about ourselves. So what we learn about who we are and what we are and what they know about ourselves, what they know about consciousness, because a lot of them know that there is only one consciousness, right? That's why they're not afraid. That's why they raise.
Well said. And we're getting close to the end of the hour, so I wanted to ask if there is any last standing piece of advice you'd give to folks who may be interested in pursuing the 26 Keys work or doing consulting, coaching with you for their mental, spiritual development.
Yeah, well, just in general, always stay positive, Like you are really spectacularly powerful, right? Don't ever lose sight of that. Stay purely positive about your prospects and what you can do with your life. If you want to learn more about my work, then yeah, you can order my book on Amazon, or you can come to my journal or my blog. It's not really a blog because it's very detailed and it's like really long stuff. It's like not for people that don't like reading. But there's a lot of material there. I've been putting up everything like once a month, I think, for 10 years. And this is like over 1 million words, on various things to do with magic and astrology and other stuff on there if you're interested in that. And if you want to talk to me personally about your chart or some other thing that's going on in your life, or you want to talk about your progress of initiation with me, then you can find me at astrovisions.org. You can request to book some time with me there, and then I'll get back to you and let you know whether I can make that time, and then we'll fix that, and we can come and meet me, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about then. Also, you can just email me. Just write to me personally. My email is dj@astralvisions.de. Or the 26 keys, 26 is numbers, the 26 keys at gmail.com. You can reach me either of those emails and I'll get back to you. Yeah.
Wonderful. And is there anywhere that people can follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and getting to get an Instagram page going. Yeah, I am 53. Give me a break, man. No, I'm really into that. I'm actually really, really keen on getting into that, actually. So yeah, you can find me there at the moment. That's where I am at the moment. That's it. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Hope so. Take care. Love you lots.
Likewise.